This video is sponsored by nordvpn.com/Luton. In the unending darkness of the galaxy, you need to always protect yourself against any who seek to exploit those who would undertake the Emperor's work, for the scum and high villainy pose an ever-present risk to all. In other words, using a VPN these days is just common sense, because having Zinch or even worse, Slaanesh in your passwords is something that nobody wants to see. It's important to protect yourself these days as much as possible, and using a VPN will give you an additional layer of protection against malicious actors, and you can check out Nord today using my custom link nordvpn.com/Luton. Phishing, malware, password issues are all things to worry about, and a VPN can enable you with positive access as well. I've used Nord both at home and while travelling, unlocking shows that are region locked, or just wanting to ensure extra privacy that we all know comes from a VPN. Nord will help block online trackers, and your traffic is always protected with robust encryption. One account will protect up to 10 devices, and with Threat Protection Pro, you'll be even better protected against things like malware. If you're downloading a file, accessing a link, it can lock websites that are fake, malicious, or used for phishing, fraud, or other scams. Now, if you feel you're pretty confident online already, your older relatives may not be. I have recently begun making my parents, extended family, more aware of the need to use additional protection online and helping them to do so, and this may be something you also wish to consider. NordVPN also features a dark web monitor to make you aware of any data breaches that have not been widely reported, and that is another must-have feature to ensure you're as safe as possible online. Now, if you've never tried a VPN before, you're missing out on the peace of mind in securing your personal data and internet activity. You can use my link below again, nordvpn.com/Luton, to always secure the best deal possible, and you can use my promo code Luton for an additional discount at checkout. You can find all of this listed in the pinned comment and notes below, so try NordVPN today and ensure that you're as protected as possible while navigating the void of the internet warp, albeit without a Gellerfield. Now, before people fall over themselves to make the point, my theme for today's video is, what if 40k? The wild speculations, random ideas that used to be the stuff of dreams and friends chatting crazy ideas over a game of 40k are now no longer crazy. And I guess it's also a small bridge between 40k and me doing another video where I talk about Apocalypse, which is coming before the end of the year. But we're lucky enough to live in a time now where these kind of ideas can become a digital reality. And having talked about this recently when I live streamed the still very much in development game Forever Winter, it seemed worthy to continue that conversation, because it inspired and sparked many discussions of how suitable a game in this setting with a 40k context could be. From its atmosphere to the immersion and the ability to explore a side of 40k we rarely get to see, that of the anonymous masses. Because within the galaxy of the Imperium, we understand that the verse of Warhammer 40,000 is considerably more than just its literal setting. 40k is a complex, deep lore platform by which to tell almost infinite stories. It's more than a tabletop game, it's more than a painting hobby or a pure narrative verse, which can take a little adjusting to that idea for anybody coming in new, because most often what they will have seen and experienced so far is Space Marines, Tyranids, Space Marines, Necrons, Orcs, Space Marines, and then maybe some Space Marines. The verse of 40k can take us on a journey from vast, immense battles in space. It can range across multiple different worlds, or it can focus in on specific areas and characters, depending on just what it's trying to deliver. For example, as I have often mentioned, in the Warhammer Crime series of novels, it establishes for us Varen Gantua, a massive hive city of billions upon the planet of Alecto, a world which, in stark contrast to many others we hear about, seems considerably isolated. For those that live there barely have any understanding that the Xenos even exist in the galaxy, let alone that they are a threat. And it's these kind of details which will twist our view of the humans who live there, compared to those who are starkly aware of the Xenos threat. It broadens our understanding of the verse itself, and the kind of realities that are possible for life in the Imperium. It makes the human aspect far more compelling. And then you could pivot to Space Marine 2, which sees you deployed to a world deluged by Tyranids. Yet, far from being a vulnerable human, you are an Astartes, the most powerful mass-deployed human warriors to exist in the galaxy. You'll enter into a battle with considerable defensive and offensive capabilities, and are capable of bringing down even the most abhorrent alien monstrosities. And if we were to move to the Heresy novels taking place 10,000 years prior to the age of Demetrian Titus, and which are for most living in M41 little more than now mythology. But we see here the stories, of course, that are told to us through detailed character-driven perspectives. They explore how the Imperium began, the intentions, the activities of some of the most key players who worked alongside the Emperor, like of course Malkador. But by the time of its conclusion, the events of this period would set the Imperium on a path that would lead to the emergence of the Ecclesiarchy, the Imperial cult, and the devastating period of stagnation that would crush all hope from human civilization throughout the coming 10,000 years. And also, heads up, let's make a game about the Age of Apostasy. But all of these are just some of the most well-known established areas of the 40k verse. What is more interesting sometimes are those dark corners, the underbelly of the hive cities, and the areas less explored. And this is something I've tried to consider in some of the more speculative episodes like Worst Jobs. But really, we could go off in any number of directions, from Xenos campaigns to Inquisitors unwittingly becoming the pawns of the Dark Gods, among others, and who, despite their best intentions, made things in fact far worse for humanity. There are the developments prior, during, and after the rise of Gilliman that still remain significantly underexplored, not to mention a vast litany of questions about the era Indomitus. But the lack of specifics about an expansive, all-consuming galactic narrative verse that people are insatiably hungry for leads us to something we all do very often: speculation. And we've begun to see, though, more recently, games which will offer us a glimpse of what the next 10-20 years may promise when it comes to the digital world of exploration. Darktide, Rogue Trader, Mechanicus, or Space Marine 2 all have paid considerable attention to detail and put more meat on the bones of that immersive 40k world. Yet there are also the curious games which we may think of as being 40k adjacent. That is, games that really feel like they're just a few skulls away on a data slate from being set in the Imperium. Which of course brings us to the techno-apocalyptic setting of Forever Winter. Now, I had multiple people point me toward this game a month or so ago because of how comparable it could be to 40k, thanks to operator Drewski, who gave me a heads up about this in the first place. But in Forever Winter, we see a world where humanity is on the brink of collapse. It's immersed in brutal conflict, factional conflict, and are left struggling to survive amid the remnants of their technological achievements. Now, where Forever Winter plunges players into the immediate aftermath of a world devastated by technology gone awry, because in fact it's still going on as you work through the game there, Warhammer 40,000 expands its narrative across a galaxy-wide scale, where entire systems and hive cities have rotted. So where does Forever Winter sit when it's stacked against 40k? Could it be something we might imagine as more of a prequel setting? The Unification Wars, imagine that as a game? Or even earlier still, the last days of the Dark Age of Technology, perhaps? Either could be possible, but both would be very compelling if somebody ever brought them into being. The aesthetic styles of both 40k and Forever Winter share that same desolate sense of us existing, that is, amid humanity's ruin. But where 40k and its grim dark aesthetic might see gothic technological constructs layered beneath the detritus and decay of millennia, A game like Forever Winter is leaning heavily into something more contemporary. It does have cybernetic things, it has post-apocalyptic wasteland survival, but we're forced to traverse across dilapidated urban landscapes, which are as beautiful as they are horrifying. They're defined by the most recent technological collapse and are very much recently abandoned, with resources still being actively fought over as you move through that environmental space. Now really, I just wanted to talk more about how, in this single example, we can see two settings but which overlap, and both would suggest consideration about the different ways that a civilization can fall. Something which you well know is one of my adjacent spheres of interest, at least to think about. So where Forever Winter sees the near immediate ruins of human civilization amid devastating industrial warfare, Warhammer 40,000 offers a reality where entire planets are reduced to ashes, and in conflicts that see worlds reduced to ritualistic behaviours after 10,000 years of unending war. So I invite you to imagine and discuss perhaps your ideal 40k scenario. For myself, it's the idea of a hive city apocalypse, the outer ring of desolation in the wastelands, the underhive, the lower tiers. We see hive war and invading horrors battling against the massive war machines of the Imperium, and we are working within that space. We can even cross over into the lower levels of a hive city and come back out to the dust wastelands. Now critically, we would not take the role of an Astartes or a guardsman. We would be a humble local militia person, or perhaps that group of Mechanicus-sanctioned scavengers. Perhaps even lower, a human scavenger attempting to gain power for their gang-like family in the Underhive. But let us discuss more, and we'll begin with the technological apocalypse. So if you are unfamiliar with the game, Forever Winter is an early access game where the general beats of the story are about survival in the shadow of a once great civilization. Sound familiar? The game takes place upon an Earth that has been plunged into an endless winter. We can well imagine that this is the result of a global nuclear apocalypse, but also it could be a natural disaster. We see the remnants of humanity huddling together in the broken ruins of their cities, and these really are abject ruins. The planet and population are devastated by the unchecked use of technology, seemingly, particularly a network of machines and AI systems that have spiraled out of control. And this has seen the typical apocalyptic cascade failures of ecosystem, climate, and infrastructure. The perpetual winter which grips the planet feels to me a very similar metaphorical reflection of that as seen in 40k, thereby humanity's failure to harness their own creations and thereby leaving them frozen, stagnating in a terminal state of decline, struggling to scrape by without the means to support their greatest technology. And in this kind of technological apocalypse, just as in 40k, technology becomes this very double-edged sword. It is both the cause of the apocalypse and the only tool that survivors have to resist their complete and total annihilation. Something that becomes immediately apparent as you must navigate a world where the remnants of past technology lie scattered all around. And this is often the form of derelict machines, automated fabrication plants, and just broken cities. As with an Imperial hive city, the decaying remains are these permanent reminders of what was lost, and it's something that remains ever present, this sense of scale. You're picking and scavenging through the remains of this technological debris for the bare bones of what you need for survival. I think where Forever Winter and 40k really come to this similar point of overlap is where human survivors have to endure. They have to suffer this bleak, horrifying reality and make do with what little remains functional. They have barely serviceable gear, weapons that can only hope to patch together scraps of old technology and create functional weapons, secure water, shelter, and warmth. And this is all whilst a war beyond their understanding or control continues above between the various factions. What was once a hub of human ingenuity has now become a desolate wasteland. What to me has always been interesting is in comparing the grim dark of the Imperium of Mankind and the technological apocalypse of something like Forever Winter. And I've done this, and I'm sure you have too, whenever you are watching any movie, TV show or game which vaguely overlaps towards 40k. You begin to think, what would this be like if everything had skulls all over it? In Forever Winter there is undoubtedly a lot of skulls, but they also lean towards sort of Mechanicus themes with the appearance of rogue AI remnants, drones which continue to operate with corrupt directives, which are quite terrifying versus even more of the human NPCs which exist in the game. Now, as I said, all of this makes me think more about a game which is in the shadow of human civilization pre-Imperium. We could imagine a world where technology has turned on its creators, a reality where humans are clinging on by a thread, similarly. And I think really what we're evoking of here is ideas about the Dark Age of Technology, the war with the Men of Iron, or at least the very end of that time. It's the age-old human fear of relying too heavily on machines without understanding their limitations or fail-safes, which is again a very big theme that we've thought about a lot before. Now, when I was playing Forever Winter, we can well imagine that this could also take place upon an Imperial planet that has been lost or abandoned by the Imperium, that has attempted to survive and even develop new technology. Perhaps they had an STC, but they didn't understand how to use them, and now they've ended up in this collapsing state of decay. It's one of my favourite elements of the 40k verse, also, this sense of humans no longer understanding how their machines work, but that they still must rely entirely upon them, and so treat them with this mix of reverence and fear, where ancient machines are worshipped as mythical holy relics. What really spurred me though into thinking about Forever Winter and 40k was the recent video I put out where we looked at the collapse of Hive Secundus upon Necromunda, because it is such an epic story. But it also reminds us of how these cities are seemingly indestructible, but also very, very fragile, so that when they do inevitably collapse, the results are of course catastrophic. In the Imperium, I often talk about some of their larger, more consistent goals. The discovery of STC, the Great Rift, securing rogue psychers, and of course the protection of worlds from chaos corruption. But within that, I would also add the fall of a Hive city, because Hive worlds are the heart and the lifeblood of the Imperium, so the collapse or destruction of any of these is a nightmare scenario. Now, we might often joke about the Imperium's indifference to people's lives disappearing as being little more than numbers on a report for the Administratum. And that's not entirely untrue, but at the same time you have the reality of tens of billions of human souls disappearing, infrastructure disintegrating, and this will have a broader impact. It will see systems fail, and the carefully maintained balanced positions of production and survival across regions are wholly shattered. So when thinking about a world as we see in Forever Winter, we can imagine, as I did, a collapsed Hive city. The survivors feeling abandoned fight amongst themselves over dwindling resources, entire districts are reduced to slums and war zones, and the wealthy might already have fled to orbiting ships or fortified sections of the city. But it is among the lower classes who are abandoned to fend for themselves. Then you have also the Underhive, which is already lawless, and that's going to become an even greater battleground for everything that pours outward, thereby exploiting the disruption for their own gain. And when we think about the grim dark of 40k versus a more standard near future tech apocalypse, you can go the route as seen in Forever Winter, which focuses on this more survivalist nature and narrative. Because if this were to be tackled from a 40k setting, especially Hive cities, you need to also represent a longer term degradation of human civilization. I'd want to be asking what happens to an Imperial Hive city when its citizenry are no longer bound by the framework and tethers of the Imperial cult, not to mention all the tech that once held these cities together begins failing, the water, the heating, and so on. Because don't forget, for most Hive worlds, the outside environment is entirely inhospitable. So people are trapped inside to a chaotic world of predatory hive war, brutal and unrelenting, or they're scavenging around the base, battling the elements as much as any rogue warlords. Or do we dare ascend to the perhaps abandoned but extremely dangerous middle and upper hive spires, which likely contain still enforcers and defensive systems, maybe even the odd spira or so. So it's really all of this which is interesting to me. It's this idea that you start with the base point, and then with 40k as a backdrop, you can really go off in so many different directions. And I find that's always very exciting to think about. And I think honestly, there is a massive appetite for this because you just do tend to see it whenever these games come along. One of the most striking points of comparison between Forever Winter and Warhammer 40,000 is another element of 40k that I've often tried to make people more aware of, as remaining one of the greatest threats to the Imperium. And that is, of course, the ending scenario which sees the depiction of planets ravaged by civil war. In both settings, humanity's struggle to survive often will turn inward, as different factions fight over the remains of their civilization. Yet this is something that has only ever been explored in 40k through the narrative side. Of course, usually chaos corruption. And far less times has it been done through renegades, those who simply disagreed and said, you know what, we don't really like this whole Imperium thing. Now it's true that in 40k there are of course whole campaigns, the likes of Krieg and Refanon, where we hear about Imperial worlds just saying no. But most often what we see are planets also pushing back and then having to deal with, most critically, external control coming in. It is much more possible that we would see something as depicted in Forever Winter in the early stages, which is again why I wanted to use it as an illustrative medium today, because these conflicts are often sparked by either desperation or, say, some rogue individual sparking unrest in a hive city. The end result is a different group of survivors fighting over control of key resources, such as the geothermal power or military assets. And you could have others to contend with. It need not just be civilian war. You could have gene-stealer cults happening. And so then, of course, we're going to be looking at skirmish-level, small-scale warfare, with the remnants of human armies reduced to ragtag, undersupplied militias, using whatever technology they can to scavenge. The battles are very intense and brutal, but personal, as each side fights for their immediate survival rather than any broader ideological dominance. Typically, when a planet falls into rebellion, the Imperium responds with overwhelming force. It may send legions of soldiers, tanks, specialists like the Sororitas, and the massive war machines of the Mechanicus to crush any such uprising. And then it's usually going to be pretty successful. But such a conflict can involve millions of troops, even orbital bombardments, which reduce continents to ashes. So while this is interesting to hear and understand, it's rarely illustrated in the 40k verse or seen from an immersive perspective. Which is why when I began playing Forever Winter, it was this scale of destruction that is so awe-inspiring. You might remember the small speculative Imperial Guard after-action report I slid in past videos, but we were talking about Titans and Titanic weaponry. And the character there was imagining what it looked like as she looked up and saw these immense weapons firing overhead. It's this idea of how does it feel to be an ordinary human on the ground witnessing these vast machines of war being deployed, to see entire worlds locked in conflict for decades or even centuries. It's something that is often lacking for me in 40k games, but it is starkly apparent in Forever Winter. It's this idea that the wars are rarely about survival truly for any one human in an immediate sense. Instead of that, they are emotionless meat grinders. They're anonymous, and often fueled by bizarrely acute religious fervour in 40k. It may well also contain political machinations or ancient grudges between noble houses. To see a planet locked in civil war in 40k is a microcosm of the galaxy's endless cycle of violence, where victory is often indistinguishable from defeat, because the cost of victory is the planet itself being rendered uninhabitable. Which brings us neatly on to reflective aesthetic. Now for me, the reason I wanted to turn this video out is that the timing was really great, because in the most recent Worst Jobs, we discussed this concept of a battlefield scavenger in Warhammer 40,000, so it was pretty pertinent that Forever Winter was also coming along, and also we're thinking about games with like Space Marine 2. But this idea of a battlefield scavenger really ignited something which many people got excited about to imagine the prospect of, or that we could see a game or some other visual illustration of that activity, the tasks, the sites that you could be involved in. Perhaps you're attached to a Mechanicus crew and you go from world to world doing the heavy cleanup of massive battles. You never actually see the action, only the aftermath. It could be something combined like Hard Space Shipbreaker, but also you're on the ground and scavenging through like in Forever Winter. And as we've talked about already, but we'll talk about some more next, it's this scale and grandeur of the Imperium's architecture and the world itself that are crucial here in what we want to be experiencing. Hive cities stretch for miles both above and below ground, and while starships are the size of continents, their designs resembling enormous cathedrals in space, we also bring it right back down to the human scale of you existing in a hive city. So you see and get this feel of the full scale. And that's what we want. You want to feel that immersion in that kind of experience. Because in order to truly feel as if you're existing in the 40k world, you need to feel that scale, which most recently Space Marine 2 achieved with some serious weight of achievement in the aesthetic scale department. Not to mention the grimdark blending of futuristic tech with ancient gothic elements. Heavy with history, but also slowly decaying, and this is very emblematic of humanity's undiminished apathetic arrogance toward grandeur at any cost in M41. It must be said though, that Darktide also achieved this as you entered into the lower hive levels. You could feel that vast space you're entering. And that was another visual masterpiece. The grimdark of 40k is evident in the design of almost every element of the Imperium's architecture and technology. Factories are not just clean, sterile environments, they may not even be efficient. They are massive forges, spewing soot and fire. They're more reminiscent of the 19th century, workers toiling in endless drudgery, often unaware of just how the machines they operate even work beyond the physical actions they know to carry out. Pull a lever at the right time, that's what my job is. On any battlefield, that same grim darkness to the technology war in 40k is immediately apparent. Knights, titanic constructs, they're oversized, they're worn down. You've got Guard and Astartes tanks, hulking behemoths that are adorned with skulls and purity seals. Because all of these designs have as much about inspiring fear as they do functionality. The aesthetics of the Imperium emphasize the industrial power and the brutality of the human empire, but they also retain this nod toward decay, which is what the grim darkness of 40k is all about. It's that sense of being old and gothic, but also highly advanced. It's a strange juxtaposition of decaying, yet must be maintained well. You can get this sense that somewhere, hidden beneath the grime and environmental attrition, is actually a highly refined piece of technology in anything that you might be seeing in M41. It's just that it's very likely it's been smothered by ritual skulls, pseudo-religious propaganda. And even among the more baroque elements, there remains this overwhelming sense of decay, as though humanity is desperately trying to hold on to its glory, because even as their civilization slowly crumbles around them, which is of course exactly what is happening, the Imperium is just left in this state of disillusionment. It's a once great empire with so much promise, now a shadow of its former self, decaying from within while wars wage endlessly against both internal and external threats. Forever Winter, by contrast, is far more grounded in something adjacent to human realism. It's a world where seemingly a technological catastrophe has already occurred in the recent past. The remnants of machinery and architecture look distinctly near future relative to the current period, albeit twisted and broken. There are no towering Gothic spires or continent-sized starships here. But again, imagine if there were. The post-apocalyptic aesthetic of the world is a central element for Forever Winter, not just of the game's mechanics, but its entire visual communication. Ash and snow or material blankets everything, hab blocks or other destroyed infrastructure disappear into the background, as if they were never used for anything at all. Industrial complexes are abandoned and desiccated, and the world feels empty, as though humanity's technological achievements are slowly being consumed by the world itself, and it's a lifeless world, save for the occasional survivor wandering bands of factional augmented soldiers or the rogue machines still operating, and I think this is one of the greatest divergences between the worlds. For the tech in this period, Forever Winter doesn't seem very grand or divine. It feels broken and abandoned, but nothing approaching the reverence seen in 40K. You also see in the machines of war a more utilitarian design than those in 40K. These aren't hulking tanks adorned with skulls and purity seals. They're pretty straight drones, they're automated turrets, they're robotic scavengers, still carrying out their last directives long after the creators have died already. So technology in this setting, at least of our level of existence, is something to be feared. You should approach an old AI system or a derelict space with caution, because understand, these machines could still pose a significant danger, despite their deteriorated state, as they sit there, heavily rusted, half buried, lights flickering weakly. And it's these aesthetics that convey to us the overlapping comparisons to anything we might want to imagine in a 40K world, or overlay onto a period like the Dark Age of Technology. Aesthetic choices obviously reflect any core narrative, and so between 40K and Forever Winter, we see these thematic differences. In Warhammer 40,000, something I often see people asking is, why does the Imperium always build these very exaggerated architectural designs and immense war machines? Well, despite having some functional use, quite obviously they are there to represent humanity's obsession with power and control. The Imperium clings to its crumbling empire using grandiose, decaying technology as both a tool of oppression and a symbol of its dominance. The vast hive cities and their cathedral-like starships remind us how the Imperium is as powerful and grand as it is flawed, and it works because its citizens fight to preserve a system that has long since decayed into madness, with many wars fought over relics of technology that they can then barely understand. Just to simply summarize, aesthetics tell a story themselves, and for the Imperium, this is one of strength and defiance, but also of blind madness. In something more grounded, but still one which demonstrates to us a horrifying, all-consuming planetary war, with you playing as a weak, feeble human scavenger, the message would be altogether different. It's that sense of the human condition and its fragility. As I said earlier, I think we can well imagine several scenarios which would suit a blending of concepts. But for fun, let's lay them out in this section. We can consider the interest and appeal that a Forever Winter-style game set in the Warhammer 40,000 verse would bring to audiences who adore bleak, survivalist, extraction-based themes and weave them into the grand mosaic of the 40K setting. The narrative focus would need to also shift from the more typically massive, galaxy-spanning conflicts to the more personal ground-level struggles which would see you experience survival in the aftermath of catastrophic war, where even a single bullet would carry great weight and implication. So I decided on three potential scenarios that blend this apocalypse of Forever Winter with the ruined worlds of the Warhammer 40,000 universe. I think it's clear there are innumerable scenarios that you could explore given the broad sweeping aspects of 40k lore, but for fun, I'm sticking to three, and again, tell me your thoughts in the comments below. Now, I've mentioned this one. Imagine a world devastated by a colossal battle between titans, titan war, titan death. The towering war machines of the Adeptus Mechanicus and their chaos-corrupted counterparts. The battlefield is littered with the remnants of these massive god machines. Their broken forms are half buried under the snow, ice, or the dirt. These titans, once capable of devastating entire cities with a single volley of their weaponry, now are dormant and broken. Their towering frames act as both a source of scale, wonder, and terror for the survivors, but the conflict, despite being over, has left the planet in absolute ruin. It had a thriving population, now reduced to scattered, desperate bands of survivors that are rambling around and scavenging amongst the battlefields. So in this scenario, players would navigate a planet where the aftermath of a titanic battle has reduced the city to rubble. The remnants of the Imperium's military might be also strewn across landscape. The rusted corpses of titans dominate the horizon, their power cores inactive but still potentially dangerous. The survivors, as I said, scavengers, former soldiers, civilians, all in the shadow of these fallen machines. You must use the wreckage for shelter, weapons, and warmth. The planet's surface is a mix of ice, waste, and industrial wreckage. Entire cities are built around the rusting hulls of these machines. Their interiors are used as makeshift homes and bases. But the surviving tech priests of the Adeptus Mechanicus, still devoted to the machine god, would play a key role. They might seek to revive the fallen titans and ensure their resurrection as the only way to restore order, while others would scavenge their tech, repurposing ancient systems to provide warmth and power to the last bastions of human life. So you as a player could face hostile factions then fighting over control of these vast wrecks, with the tech priests creating deadly traps, automated defenses to protect the sacred machines, but corrupted remnants of the chaos warbands who originally fought here could also be lurking within the shattered titan wrecks, hunting survivors or trying to complete unfinished rituals. So it's pretty broad of an idea. The aesthetic could draw on the industrial mechanical elements of the Warhammer 40k verse, but also these vast fallen titans juxtaposed against the desolation of a planet consumed by war would be pretty epic. Massive battle scars mar the land. The landscape would be extremely eerie and haunting, with the remains of soldiers, shattered war machines scattered across the entire planet. And I think that would play very well into this idea, this reminder of the sheer scale of warfare and destruction which exists in M41. And then we come to the collapse of a Forge World. Forge Worlds are the beating hearts of the Imperium's war machine. They churn out endless supplies of weapons, tanks, and ammunition. But what would happen when a Forge World collapses? Perhaps after a catastrophic internal rebellion, maybe a failed Chaos incursion, or even just an attack by a Xenos force. In this scenario, the players would find themselves stranded on a Forge World which has been reduced to industrial wasteland. The planet's atmospheric processes, damaged during this conflict, have malfunctioned, plunging the planet into an artificial ice age. Its vibrant manufactorums are now silent, the forges cold, and the assembly lines are buried beneath thick detritus and the ruins of various sectors. Players would need to navigate labyrinthine ruins then on these massive factories. They would go from the external to the internal. They'd be searching for food, warmth, weapons to defend themselves against rogue servitors, malfunctioning Skitarii that continue to roam halls, and maybe they have functional factional intentions as well. The planet's tech priests are isolated in citadels, clinging to ancient rites, worshipping their machines, even as they slowly await death. There could also be some kind of ticking clock element, whereby we are attempting to perhaps secure our own route off the world before Imperial reinforcements arrive. The few other survivors, workers, slaves, etc., have formed tribal communities in the shadows of the massive manufactorums, and they also are scavenging from the dead husks of whatever they can find to get resources to stay alive, and those could be a point of conflict for you as well. But the scenario really is emphasizing the Forever Winter themes of scavenging survival in a broken world. It's the remnants of advanced technology everywhere, but you don't have the proper knowledge or the resources. They are near to useless. They're pretty much just aesthetic dressing. A plasma generator, for example, could keep an entire settlement, an entire hab district warm, but nobody knows how to repair it, so it constantly threatens to then overload and explode. It's just more trouble than it's worth. So you might have to make tough choices about which broken pieces of technology are worth the risk of trying to fix. And this also starts to make me think about older games like This War of Mine, where you were having to scavenge and make difficult decisions about what to take away, whether to defend your settlement, whether you should go out on scavenging raids, because just doing that in itself is a risk. You could also have difficult diplomatic options. Dare you seek out isolated tech priests for assistance, knowing that there is very likely that this could be dangerous and lead to your very end. The aesthetics of this scenario would combine very dark industrial sprawl of a decaying forge world. Perhaps it's cold, freezing with the atmosphere no longer functioning properly. You'd have massive half-buried factories and manufactorums. Maybe some of the furnaces are still on, so you have different environments. Maybe as you go deeper into them, you encounter more danger and you have to try and find the safest place to exist there. All the assembly lines, all of the construction elements are just frozen in place, and it's this bizarre landscape of machinery that's just entombed and abandoned. Corridors filled with, again, mass detritus, tons of servitors wandering around all over the place. It's just a very dark, bleak, and terrifying environment. It's this true sense of isolation, the weight of what once was, a fallen ruin. But the key thing here would be, similarly to Forever Winter, this extreme sense of isolation, that other conflicts and struggles are occurring upon the world. Maybe there are these dangerous figures in the tech priests, and you have to try and decide or find a way by which to either get them to aid you, maybe you start working for them as a means by which to escape the planet itself. Then lastly, we have the civil war in the Underhive. In this scenario, the setting of a hive world, a planet dominated by massive hive cities which tower above its surface. Now, normally hive cities are these bustling centres of production and population which house billions of people in stratified society. In this scenario, the environmental systems that keep the city functional begin to fail. This could be a combination of sabotage, perhaps some kind of insurrection. A relentless civil war then results in the planet's control systems spiralling out of control, freezing perhaps the hive city and the surrounding environment, or maybe opening the hive city to extremely dangerous radiation and dust storms which just sweep through and cut through anything, because hive cities do have these very defensive plate elements which protect it from the ravages of a world. But again, some kind of extreme environmental change there. The hive city then, once filled with masses of humans, becomes tomb-like. The upper spires become abandoned, the halls are covered in just, again, detritus and rot. The lower levels of the hive were already lawless, like we've discussed elsewhere, and they descend into further anarchy, chaos, basically. Players would begin then in different sections of the city. You could begin outside, inside, under hive, mid sections, secure whatever resources are needed. And that's going to be, again, similar to Forever Winter there. I'm thinking of their sort of means of deployment, where you can choose sort of different sections of the region, but there are different threats associated. And the deeper you go into the hive, obviously, then the more dangerous it's going to become. You'd have, again, all sorts of threats from crazed mutants, malfunctioning servitors, roving bands of zealots, gangs, and the remnants of Imperial forces just trying to fight to survive. So whilst you're playing against a backdrop of struggling against the environmental conditions, the scarcity of resources, really what you're dealing with in this scenario is the social collapse that has gripped the Underhive. Maybe there would be some kind of mechanic where you just have waves of citizenry come through and kind of rampaging hordes, and you basically have to get out of the way or you're just going to be torn to pieces. Again, in Forever Winter, there are rogue machines and so forth that will come after you if you get in their way, but if you stay out of the way, they will largely ignore you. But I like this idea that factions would be diverse here, ranging from tech-savvy scavs maintaining their ancient sort of systems to enforcers hoarding power plants. You might have to ally with different groups, but in doing so you would maybe have some moral costs to weigh there. And the aesthetic, of course, would be Hive City, urban decay, oppressive, once bustling market streets destroyed, empty, all collapsing in. I think I would go even further than we've seen in something like Darktide. It wants to be more destroyed, more collapsing in on itself. And when you get to the really deep parts of the Hive City, we're talking pitch black, filled with extreme danger. All the whilst the remnants of Imperial tech are everywhere, the ventilation shafts, the power grids, servitor-operated factories, and essentially the entire environment is just working against you. And again, when we think about something like Necromunda and Hive Secundus, whilst many people may wish to travel there for specific hunting of technology, there are those who have managed somehow to make a life living just around the Hive City, scavenging, finding ways in and out. And again, that's a kind of interesting idea of something you could do with the game like that, where you are part of the Hive City, you're trying to find your way through, but there are certain areas so dangerous that you're only going to be able to do so if you access those who have that knowledge. So just to round out today, I really want to think about post-apocalyptic media and how this has long been a popular genre in both literature and visual storytelling. Its appeal has grown particularly strong during times of course, social uncertainty, because of course we're thinking about the 70s, the 80s, the nuclear fears that were acutely in people's minds. But also in this era, you had one of my absolutely favourite things when it comes to fictional worlds, which was this strangely bleak dystopian focus for science fiction in films and television, and really haven't seen anything like that since. Because in that era, everything tended to be a little more grounded, a little more real, but often the outcome was not great for the characters, and they tended to focus on story more than interpersonal relationships of characters. And it was in this time came one of the favourite British series that I've mentioned and talked about before, Survivors. It captured people's imaginations by portraying the lives of a small group of people who were struggling to rebuild society after an absolutely deadly global pandemic had wiped out most of humanity. And this was an era of the Cold War anxieties, great societal upheaval. Survivors gave a vision of a world in which the rules of modern civilization no longer applied. It made people think about exploring what it means to survive in a world without technology, law, or governance. And that, of course, resonated very strongly because it tapped into fears about societal collapse and also this narrative of hope and resilience there as well. Now, since that time, there are too many series to list, but very few, I think, have done as good a job as that series. And again, I want to talk about that more when I do some kind of other apocalypse video pretty soon. But in a similar vein, the appeal of post-apocalyptic narratives like Forever Winter, for example, and also in Warhammer 40,000, it's their ability to portray worlds where the infrastructure of civilization has crumbled or beginning to crumble, but humanity still persists, often in brutal, desperate, and ingenious ways. Because these settings are more about asking what-if questions. What if the systems that sustain our lives, such as technology, governance, and infrastructure, suddenly failed? How would people adapt? What kind of new societies could emerge? These are the questions that are very compelling because they force us to confront our own reliance on the comforts of modern life. And some of you will know that I've spoken about the fact that I've been working on my own personal fictional narrative, original fictional narrative as well. And of course, I start dealing with some of these ideas there as well. but it seems to be ever enduring, this appeal of post-apocalyptic scenarios. It's tied to a fascination just with the end of the world itself. It's a morbid curiosity about how would life continue in the face of, say, extinction. Whether that's through a natural disaster, technological collapse, war, pandemics, the narratives often offer a kind of safe space for exploring our deepest fears. Some might remember my notably eerie now discussion of what might occur with real-world experiences of lockdowns, supply chain breakdowns, and societal disruption in the Imperial Resource Worlds video. I wanted to talk about that kind of concept in a big sense for 40K because it also mirrored the kind of scenarios you see depicted in post-apocalyptic media, but it was just very strange that I mentioned it in that video and that it literally happened like 3 months later. But the other thing, of course, is always the critiques of modern society, particularly with an over-reliance on technology more than ever, our hubris in believing that we can control absolutely everything that occurs. Which is why I really think some new games set within the Dark Age of Technology or the Unification Wars could be particularly strong, because people are really interested in these kind of ideas, the ideas of the collapses, the end of the world, the apocalypse, everything falling apart, or our over-reliance on systems which ultimately we can't control. And Forever Winter is a good effort in that the collapse is directly tied to humanity's inability to manage the very systems that once had clearly brought it prosperity. While in 40K, humanity's technological decay remains this central theme. Post-apocalyptic media reminds us of the dangers whilst also exploring the enduring strength of human survival. And 40K does this, but in a far more blatant and unsubtle fashion. But part of the appeal of these settings is that tension between destruction and rebirth. Post-apocalyptic worlds represent both an end and a beginning, because the collapse, the apocalypse of civilization is very devastating, but it rarely is the true end. When you look at ancient civilizations which had their own collapses, their own apocalypse, human society didn't just disintegrate and become extinct. Yes, those societies collapsed, but then they fragmented, rebuilt, and changed and become something else. So the collapse of civilization is very devastating, but it does create new societies from the wreckage of the old. And it's that sense of potential which it drives much of the fascination within this. And I think it's as true in 40K as it is in anything else. But in Forever Winter, for instance, the landscape might seem very bleak, but it also gives you this canvas upon which players can build their own stories of survival, of scavenging, community. And that's exactly the story of the game. You're sent out on missions to collect materials, but there also remains an inherent, permanent tension between the bleakness of the apocalypse and the hope that humanity can rebuild. Now, undoubtedly in 40K, that sense of hope is very much more subdued. It's the scale of the collapse in 40K that is so vast that it becomes entrenched, and humanity's survival feels much more like a rebirth and more like a struggle against inevitable extinction, which is really one of the core themes for humanity in 40K. Because planets like those depicted in the scenarios described earlier, decaying forge worlds, wastelands after a titanic war, hive cities, it's a universe where the end is not a singular event, but a state of perpetual decay. Because even in this grim, dark setting, there is this morbid fascination with the sheer scale of humanity's endurance, the losses that it can take and still keep moving forward. And that's the horror of the Imperium of Mankind. It's this rotting, theocratic, authoritarian empire. But it keeps fighting, it keeps clinging to existence, even as it's disintegrating and its people suffer immensely. It's a different kind of survival. It's one that's driven not by hope, but by sheer, unrelenting will to continue to exist. But both settings do tap into this same core appeal. It's that question of how can humanity endure when everything else has seemingly failed to a terminal degree? Because they allow us to explore where the familiar has been stripped away and we're forced to confront what truly matters. It's that raw survival, it's community, and it's the will to endure. The apocalypse genre enables a glimpse into a world where things, the rules, have changed, where humanity can't rely on governments or corporations, but entirely on its own resilience. Warhammer 40,000 already offers us many different avenues to experience the world within, but so far one that is strongly missing for me is that of the bleak, survival-driven tone seen in something like Foreverwinter. Because if it were possible, the grand decaying verse of Warhammer 40,000 could be explored and experienced in a truly unique way if it was tackled in similar fashion. It would be an opportunity to explore the scale, the vision of human life in M41, and the many ways that it could respond to the collapse of civilization entirely structured around systematic indoctrination and authoritarian control. How does the Imperium handle such situations? Because whether it were scavenging the wreckage of massive titans, surviving in the industrial hulks of a forge world, or navigating frozen remnants of a once great hive city, we would still be drawn to these scenarios because they offer us a chance to explore the grim, dark reality of 40k, but also to confront our own fears and fantasies about human apocalypse. As always, I greatly appreciate your support and time here on the channel. Please tell me your thoughts about what you would like to see in a 40k game of any kind, at what level and focus. Perhaps you even dare to consider the vision from a Xenos perspective. And I do know that we've had a small period of things being quite game focused, so rest assured, as we head into November, it's going to be lore all the way. And with that, I will, as always, see you all in the next one.